Ta-da!
Is that the verse?
Yeah,
okay.
Svaprabhaya
Tesham
Yotayantya
Disho
Dasha Mushnangsh
Teja
Upanitas Tarkshnena Stotra Vajina Tadasva Prabhaya Tesham
Tadasva
Prabhaya
Tesham
Dyotayantya Disho Dasha Dyotayantya Disho Dasha Mushnangs Teja Upanitas Mushnangs Teja Upanitas Takshena Stotra Vajina Takshena Stotra Vajina Tada. At that time, Svaprabhaya, by his own effulgence, Teshan, all of them, Yotayantya, his brightness, Dishaha, directions, Dasha, 10. Mushnang, diminishing. Tejaha, effulgence. Upanitaha, brought. Tarkshyena, by Garuda. Stotravajina, whose wings are called Brihat and Ratantra. Brihat and Ratantara. Translation. Lord Narayan was seated on the shoulder of Stotra, or Garuda, who had big wings. As soon as he appeared, all directions were illuminated, diminishing the luster of Brahma and the others present. Responsively, please repeat. Lord Narayana was seated on the shoulder of Stotra, or Garuda, who had big wings. As soon as he appeared, all directions were illuminated, diminishing the luster of Brahma and the others present. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. A description of Narayana is given in the following two slokas. So we'll discuss this purport. Maybe I should start off by saving myself some time and energy and asking if anybody has any questions, or a question, or anything like that, then I can give an answer, and that'll be the end of it. Anyone have a question? It's a question I get asked everywhere around the world these days. There's one or two varieties, but there's one that's number one. That's number two. Usually they say, how do you feel? I say, with my hands. So, on my travels last year, I spent about 3.5 months in Thailand. And it is the most interesting place. from it having, well, it, right now you would say it's a Buddhist country, and not only a Buddhist country, but a Buddhist country where they eat meat. The interesting thing is the doctor I was seeing there was Chinese, and there are Buddhists, and all over China they're strict vegetarians. So, but everywhere in Thailand you will find temples of Lord Brahma. Every major building, skyscraper, has a very beautiful little temple out front of it. They call him Prabhrom in Thai language, but it's, and he has four heads, and he's obvious, it's no doubt to any Vaishnava's mind, this is Lord Brahma. And he's all over the place, not only in Bangkok, but in many other cities in Thailand. And, of course, everywhere you see Garuda. Especially there's some famous Garuda temples in Bangkok. And actually, I don't think it's Thailand. I think it's Malaysia. Who has Garuda Airlines? Indonesia, yeah. Garuda Airlines. Prabhupada had commented that when he was being told about Thailand, that they were Buddhists, and he commented that they're actually devotees of Radha Shyam Sundar. Because before it was Thailand, it was Siam. So, anyway. Here it says, as soon as he appeared, all directions were illuminated. It sounds a little bit like, as soon as Garuda appeared, all directions were illuminated, which is partially true also, but any of Krishna's consorts are also self-effulgent, or certainly not self-effulgent, but effulgent by their association with Lord Krishna. Garuda is certainly very effulgent. But here it refers to Krishna as being the source of all light. We're familiar with the Brahma Jyoti. Directly, the word light, jyoti, means light. So he's Brahmano hi pratishtaham. He's the basis of the Brahma Jyoti. I think we'll go on to the verse 20. And it's not written on the board, so. Shyamo hiranyarashanorta kirita justo Nilalaka Brahmaran Mandita Kundalasya Shankabja Chakra Sharachapa Gadasi Charma Vyagrahiran Maya Bujaya Ivakarnikara. Translation. His complexion was blackish. His garment was of a yellow color, like gold. His helmet was as dazzling as the sun. His hair was bluish, the color of black bees, and his face was decorated with earrings. His eight hands held a conch shell, wheel, club, lotus flower, arrow, bow, shield, and sword, and they were decorated with golden ornaments such as bangles and bracelets. His whole body resembled a blossoming tree, beautifully decorated with various kinds of flowers. So here's a description of Narayan, Srila Prabhupada's purport. The face of Lord Vishnu is described in this verse. appears like a lotus flower with bees humming over it. All of the ornaments on the body of Lord Vishnu are of molten gold, of the reddish gold color of the morning sunrise. So we run into wherever we travel, all kinds of the best of everything everywhere. We were just in Brazil, and they have some of the most exotic fruits there that you've never even heard of or imagined. And England imports everything, or a lot of things, or you can get anything that you want in New York. But these things I've never seen before, and very exotic taste. But one thing that defeats everything is the lotus flower. If you've ever had the chance, a fresh blooming lotus, there's nothing quite like the intoxicating scent of a fresh blooming lotus. It's more intoxicating than jasmine or any other flowers that we may have. And therefore Krishna is compared with the lotus flower. His eyes, his mouth, his feet, all the parts of his body are compared with the lotus flower. And of course, bees humming over it. His face is like a beautiful lotus with bees. Now, bees go wherever there is something sweet, so everything is brought together. In other words, if you just saw a bee's nest with some bees, you couldn't really say, oh, that's Krishna. Because it's just some bees in a bee's nest, and there's some honey there, and okay, it's sweet, but everything taken together, the best of everything, a beautiful lotus flower with bees who are not only after the sweetness of the lotus flower, but their humming creates a beautiful music, a beautiful sound. Everything about the whole description, you can just go deeper and deeper into it and realize how we're missing out on beauty. Everyone is enamored by beauty, but that's another thing. Some of the beauty in Brazil, in those areas. Brazil, in particular Rio de Janeiro, is famous for another kind of so-called beauty. But in comparison with Krishna, it pales insignificantly. The ornaments of his body are of molten gold, of the reddish gold color. We sing that. Udila Arna Puravavage. The Arna, the reddish golden color, that Arna is the sun rising, so it's just rising. And we saw some pretty spectacular sunrise because that's the equator there. Brazil is such a big country. It not only has the equator, but it has the Tropic of Capricorn also. So you can go from one extreme to a lesser extreme. Certainly the Tropic of Capricorn is better than the Tropic of London, but in other words, it's warm. But at the equator, you see the sun coming up, and or going down for that matter. It just delights the heart to see it. It's majestic, just like you go to the Himalayas the one time after living in India for 28, 29 years, the one time I went to the Himalayas. Well, I'll go back again, but I lamented that I hadn't been before, because those mountains, the whole atmosphere is surcharged. Even a mundane atheist, complete atheist, but if he goes to the Himalayas, his mind will be infused with spiritual energy of some sort. So one becomes awestruck at God's greatness. So in the same way, you see a beautiful sunshine, beautiful rising sun. So here's the color of the body of Lord Vishnu, that it resembles the ornaments on his body. They resemble that arna of the morning sunrise. The Lord appears just as the morning sun rises to protect the whole universal creation. Well, Vishnu, we're talking about Vishnu here. Krishna, of course, never leaves Vrindavan, but when he has work to do, once someone described Krishna to a reporter, people can't understand Vishnu, Krishna. So God, when he goes to the office, that's Vishnu, and when he's at home with his family, that's Krishna. So any work done is by Vishnu. In that regard, he is one of the avatars, guna avatars, Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh. Today is the appearance of Lord Shiva, who is also an incarnation of Lord Krishna. But Vishnu specifically is in the mode of goodness. It is, one may not realize it until one actually has some experience. You can learn by hearing, that's an intelligent person, but experience is one of the best teachers. And creating something is relatively easy in comparison to maintaining it. In a mood of passion, albeit guided by wisdom or intelligence or a plan or whatever vision, you can create. But to make sure that it lasts more than a few years, it really requires patience, it requires maintenance, it requires so many things. In fact, many big projects around the world, especially, say, a skyscraper or any big building, any big project, they make a budget for that building, and they build into the budget about 3 to 5% a year of the original total cost, and put it into a fund. They budget it in such a way that the interest from that fund will generate 2 to 3% of the total cost of the building when you first built it, for maintenance, because they know that things just deteriorate. Somebody recently asked me on the internet, a student, for the verse which Oppenheimer quoted when he detonated the atomic bomb. I wasn't sure which verse it was, actually, but I thought that it would be Mrityu Sarva Harascham, or it could have been Kalosmi Bharatashava, but Mrityu Sarva. Mrityu Sarva Harascham, I devour all living beings. Does anybody know? Time I am the destroyer of worlds and I come to engage all beings, but if you look at the translations, it's more suited to Mrityu Sarva. If you take the English and try to find the Sanskrit, it's more like... Anyway, the point is that time deteriorates everything. Krishna says, Saivayam Mayatevya, Yogo Prokta Puratana. Arjuna, I'm instructing you because in the course of time, my disciplic succession, I gave knowledge and it's been deteriorated. It's disappeared. So if Krishna has recognized this, Krishna put into place a disciplic succession, carefully orchestrating first to Vivashvan, then to Manu, then to Ikshvaku. But still, it deteriorated. Then we can only imagine in Kali Yuga how things will deteriorate in time. So how are we going to keep things in place? Well, we have to manifest the mode of goodness somehow from our modes of passion and ignorance. Here also, Prabhupada mentions that the Lord's arms display different weapons, and his eight hands are compared to the eight petals of a lotus flower. All the weapons mentioned are for the protection of his devotees. This is obviously, again, Vishnu. There are, now the Vishnu form that Prabhupada would talk about the most was a forearm Vishnu, and with the conch shell, the lotus, and the club, and discus chakra. Because there are many other forms of Vishnu with more weapons, eight hands, eight arms, and we're not so familiar with that, and it's enough to keep track of just his forearm forms. But he is Bhakta Vatsal. Although he's equal to everyone, certainly Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu, but nevertheless, he does reciprocate with devotees. He's not deferential towards devotees as much as he's reciprocating with them in terms of what they want. The same devotees, if they change their minds and want to be inimical towards Krishna, he'll change his posture also. So we got to be careful on that one. It's interesting. At one point, there was some discussion Prabhupada talked about taking people's initiation back, taking their names back, because they were no longer following him. Of course they loved him, but they weren't following him at all. And so that initiation is given to people who take a vow. And Prabhupada made some quite disparaging remarks about a man who will, what type of integrity has he that in front of the Vaishnavas, in front of the fire, in front of the deity, in front of the guru, he will make a vow, a stern vow, and then a little while later set it aside for his senses. So, it's Krishna comes to protect us, and we have to be prepared to accept his protection. Either we meet with his lotus flower and his conch shell, or we will see his chakra and his gada, his discus or his club. Generally, in the four hands of Vishnu, there are a wheel, a club, conch shell, and lotus flower. These four symbols are seen in the four hands of Vishnu in different arrangements. The club and the wheel are the Lord's symbols of punishment for the demons and miscreants, and the lotus flower and conch shell are used to benedict the devotees. There are always two classes of men, the devotees and the demons. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chadushkritam. He explains himself. It's not like there's any special diplomacy going on, that the government is formed, and according to how people move, we make friends and enemies or anything like that. Krishna just says, it's my creation. I'm the supreme controller, and this is the way I act. Now you make your choices. Nothing ambiguous. You follow Dharmam tu Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. You follow the laws of God, or you don't follow. If you follow, you're blessed, and if you don't, you're not blessed, punished. There are demons and devotees in this material world, but in the spiritual world there's no such distinction. In other words, Lord Vishnu is the protector of both the material and spiritual worlds. In the material world, almost everyone is of the demoniac nature, but there are also devotees who appear to be in the material world, although they're always situated in the spiritual world. A devotee's position is always transcendental, and he's always protected by Lord Vishnu. And look at that, everyone here is a demon. of course, Srila Prabhupada is not a demon. He's in the spiritual world. And we can also be in the spiritual world, karmana, manasa, gira, if we act with our body, mind, and words for the satisfaction of Vishnu, for the satisfaction of Krishna. We can be jivan mukta. And I think that's our attempt. Our perfection is our endeavor. I don't think it is possible for us to ever achieve complete perfection just because of the nature of the material world. We were discussing with someone the other day in Buenos Aires, when we first did Sankirtan. Oh, I know how it came up. It came up because came on calm how Buddhimanta Prabhu, it was the anniversary of his death, and Buddhimanta was, we came to London, Buddhimanta and I, we came to teach the Brits how to distribute books. That was back in 1972, and we stayed in Bury Place. Interesting pastimes there. Very interesting. I think that's where we first discovered, double clotted something or other. Clotted, what is it, cream? We were young brahmacharis, and that was the strategy in those days. You know, you'd fire people up with an injection of sugar and push them out on the street, give them a handful of magazines, and you know, go wild. But so we were discussing about Buddhimanta and how Krishna protects his devotees who try their best. Buddhimanta was not perfect. In fact, in his latter days, he had some problems. He drifted away, got back into some of his old habits. But he was enthusiasm personified. And it was just some weakness of the flesh, but his spirit of sankirtan, his spirit of serving Prabhupada, he was always trying, and finally he made a comeback. And I can name so many great personalities who had that same kind of, or something closely related, experience where their determination, their enthusiasm, determination, and patience was the saving grace, was the thread that kept them connected, was the path by which they were able to achieve Krishna's mercy. We're not perfect, and we should not insist that we're perfect too. To be imperfect is human, but to insist that our mistakes are perfect, that is demoniac. So I think the line between the demons and the devotees is that the devotees acknowledge that they're not perfect, and they endeavor to serve Krishna under any condition, and always to get better as much as possible. And of course, there's no end to increasing perfection. There's no end to improvement. The moment you think you're improved, that's when you're that's when your progress stops. You think I've achieved perfection. There's always room. So today is Shivratri, and of course it's interesting that you're discussing the sacrifice by Daksha, because it directly involves Lord Shiva and Parvati. Shivratri per se is not an important Vaishnava holiday. We have, Prabhupada indicated in Bombay, holidays to be followed, and we have a diorama of Lord Shiva in our temple, and we get thousands of visitors every day, but on Shivratri, of course, there's many more. But we don't have a special function for it. We put some extra garlands on the diorama of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is a great devotee of the Lord, and we can worship him, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, but we also have to be careful in our worship that we don't give people the wrong idea that we're glorifying the habits of Lord Shiva, such as smoking ganja or whatever. Of course, most of his habits they couldn't follow, but just like the ganja one. But still, if you give people an ounce, they'll take a mile. If you give them even a little chance to go astray, therefore, Narad Muni chastised Vyasadeva, "Oh, it's very nice what you've done, karma kanda." And certainly it's one method of helping people along the spiritual path, is to give them a gradual step-by-step process. They can satisfy their material desires and gradually develop bhava or bhavna. They can develop some love. Bhavna means a feeling. Bhava is the stage of love. But he said people will just, they'll get caught on the middle staircase. They'll just like we say that the bhakti nishkama type shama. Mukti Bhakti, yes, Mukti Bhakti Siddhi Kami. The Siddhi Kami, it would seem like, if you said there was a whole bunch of them there at Kumbh Mela recently, 20 million people, and all the sages came down from the Himalayas, and you could not imagine even living like that for one day, what to speak of for years or lifetimes. Living in the Himalayas, freezing cold, just wearing your birthday suit, and covered with ashes. You can't imagine it. Prabhupada talks about Narayana's Dwara and Shiva's Dwara. Shiva's Dwara is intense fire, burns up the universe, Lord Shiva. But he's defeated by Narayana, who's intense cold. Prabhupada said you can That's funny. Have you come to some discussion about this here, or I don't know. Prabhupada made a point, and I've heard this from a number of leaders who heard it from Prabhupada, that in class or in kirtan, if the deity door is open, you offer your respects. You know, you're giving darshan to Krishna's holy name, and all of a sudden you stop that darshan and give another darshan to Krishna's form. Not only that, you interrupt the train of thought of the speaker, stop the class. You never discussed that. Yeah. Yeah, right. That's right. You're giving darshan. Or you're having an ecstatic kirtan. Everybody, the deity door is open and the kirtan stops. And everybody, you know, it doesn't make sense. Anyway, now what was I talking about? I remember it. Case in point. Well, that was way back when. Oh, yes, yeah, Shiva's right, and Ryan's right, yeah. Intense cold. So intense cold is much more powerful than intense heat. You can tolerate heat, but you can't tolerate the cold. So, where was that leading? Yeah, right. And the sages, so they come down to Kumbh Mela, and of course I'm sure all of you know, but we had a tremendous festival this year. We had a tremendous Kumbh Mela that we already organized by ISKCON. It's really well organized by the Indian Army, I gotta hand it to them. You know, your usual vision of India is everything is chaos. You know, a Russian, there's a story of a Russian who came to India to work at one of their steel factories or something, a trade of technology. So he was a complete atheist, communist. But after living in India for 8 months or something, he became a theist. Asked him how he was changed. Was it, you know, he had darshan of the Lord? No. He said, after seeing how that country runs, there must be a God. But the Indian Army does a very super excellent job of organizing 20 million people who just drop in for dinner, you know. We had a very good camp there this year. In 1989, we also had a very good camp. This year we had a good camp. Very nice. It was the best camp in the whole Gumalela. Everybody said it, especially the people at Allahabad, the people who see it all. That's interesting, very interesting. The people who see it all, like the Brijabasis, they've seen all the Babas and all the Anandas and all the this and that. They're nonplussed. You don't find Brijabasis turning out to all their Saptas and their Yogyas. Everybody comes to Vrindavan. But the Brijabasis had tremendous respect for Sri Vrindavan. A, because they were proud that he was one of them. They considered him a Brijabasi. But B, because he lived there for many years, they knew that he was a genuine sadhu. And when he left the world, the Prabhupada left the world, there was a big procession through the streets of Vrindavan on a palki. And the whole of Vrindavan turned out, every shop closed down, every shopkeeper came out to offer flowers or something to Prabhupada. So same way in Allahabad, people were saying, you know, we had a camp. Swarup Damodar Maharaj came with 100 Manipuri drummers. You can't imagine 100 of these beautifully dressed turbans, you know, white, and their whole, and their drums, pakwajas, I don't know. Not exactly pakwaj, but it's not a coal. It's made of wood, but they're the beautiful synchronism and beautiful dancing and beautiful kirtan, sankirtan. It's actually Manipuri sankirtan, and they went all over the mela with, you know, a couple of about 300 devotees in a maha sankirtan, and we distributed something. The reports they sent were like 15,000 plates of prasadam a day. Now, that's not a little halava in the hand or, you know, a little sandesh or something. It's rice, dal, chapati, sabji, and halava every day. Morning. Actually, it was supposed to be morning and evening, but it just went on throughout the day. And we had tents for members, donors, devotees. Spectacular. Oh, really? Anybody else see him? You saw him? What was his name? He's not going to mention, but you can. Huh? Ah, come on. We're all family here. I mean, there's no outsiders. Who was it? All right, I don't know him. Alpa Chidra Sarvalok. Yeah, nothing we can do about that. And it always bewilders me. These people are demented. Jayadvaita Swami once wrote one of his how can we describe? I wouldn't go that far. His very pointed BTG no, he wrote there was some riots. They had a few problems over there in Los Angeles, and he wrote something about L.A., you know. So this Prabhupada disciple wrote in, and they printed it in the little column letters to the editor, that why are you people so hung up on rules and regulations? I get disgusted. You just have to love Prabhupada, that's all. Madam, I can't understand where you're coming from, you know. I love you, but I kick you in the face. You tell me to do anything, and I won't do it, but still, you should know that I love you. What kind of love is that? But I am 100% sure. Now, on another note, Burke Rochford, our friend and critic amongst the sociologists, he was interviewed and he was, you know, well, it's not my opinion, but the facts speak for themselves, and he was, you know, criticizing ISKCON. But then he said that they will, you know, there was some alluding to the fact that this would destroy ISKCON and ISKCON would disappear and blah, blah, blah. And he said, no, no, I don't think that'll happen. He said that they'll find a way out. He said there are still thousands of very sincere devotees who want to worship Krishna. So as long as we have a core of people who want, you know, the real thing, then there's, how do you deal with that? Well, I guess we have to somehow or other write more. We should have people writing more, write to the BBC or Channel 4 or have our own television program. And okay, let's not be judgmental, Prabhu, but still, we don't have to mention names, but we can say very loudly, anybody who smokes ganja and claims he's a follower of Srila Prabhupada is simply a nonsense rascal and is not a Prabhupada disciple. They're not. And there's one instance where somebody came in San Francisco and he stayed for a little while, got initiation, and then left. And someone was asking Prabhupada about that. And Prabhupada said, oh, he was not my disciple. We got it. It takes a lot of cool-headed, that's why we shave our heads, right? Cool-headed intelligence to understand who is a devotee and who is, what is ISKCON, and who is a follower of Srila Prabhupada. Dikshasti chet pranavibhish chobhajam phanisham. I don't know how people can rationalize those things. Sometimes the relative world is much, much harder to understand than the absolute world. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam.